Solid Dog here. We've got an interview with Ben Smith, a fabulous singer-songwriter turning heads in the Australian music scene.
I dive a little deeper into sights and sounds that I feel so familiar. You can spend your lifetime looking round for treasure, but I long.
Ben held recording contracts in the UK in his teens before returning to Australia to win the Melbourne Blues Festival's Best Songwriter and other awards in 2004. Today in the studio we've got Ben Smith, a great young singer-songwriter from Australia. He's got a great story to tell about being a musician in this country and in England as well. Thanks for dropping in, Ben.
Not a problem.
Okay, well, today we're going to play a few original numbers, which I really appreciate you bringing the guitar in and doing some stuff for us. We'll play some cuts off those albums and talk about where you've been and where you're going. So, as we always do, let's start at the top. So, how did you get interested in music?
Well, I'll start at the very top. We've got half an hour?
Yep, all the time you like.
Fantastic. Well, I was about 8, I think, and my dad was playing some Dire Straits in the house in Queensland. I was about 8 years old, and I was playing a book like a guitar. And my dad said, "Do you want a guitar for your birthday, for your 9th birthday?" And I said, "Yeah." So they bought me a little nylon string, which is still knocking around somewhere. When I was 9, my 9th birthday, and there was an ad in the local paper for free guitar lessons. This guy called George Emiliotis, who's a bit of a legend up where I used to live in Queensland, was giving away free guitar lessons because he was trying to start a band. So he was trying to start it from scratch. So first time I went, there was like 25 people, and within about 3 weeks, I was the only person that was still coming. So I ended up just going to his house, and you know, my parents became good friends with him and his kids and everything. So we became good family friends, and I used to go for free guitar lessons for about 2 years when I was 9 and 10.
Great.
And I picked it up really quick. I think my first song was "House of Rising Sun," which I think I learned after the first lesson.
Yeah.
And sang it and everything, and it just sort of started from there. And then I started playing in bands up in Toowoomba. There was a jam night on every Monday, and every Friday they had a show at the Royal Mail Hotel in Toowoomba, and I used to go along to that when I was 9, 10.
So this was the Sunshine Coast.
This is in the Sunshine Coast, yeah. This is Africa. I came to Australia when I was 3.
Right, initially. Which is north of Brisbane for all you listeners out there. And yeah.
Well, we actually first came and lived on the Gold Coast. I went to primary school and Currumbin Primary, and then went up to Queensland, or up to sort of Sunshine Coast. Sorry. By the time I was about 11, I'd played in bands for a few years, and you know, played in front of people and written quite a few songs. And then my parents came back to Scotland, and I went through high school in Scotland. And while I was in high school, I recorded a song for my uncle. My uncle had some friends that had done a favour for him, and he said, "Can you write him a thank you song?" So I wrote him a thank you song, and this got passed. He lived in London, and it got passed around a few people in London, and it got picked up by this guy who had a publishing company in a studio. So from the age of about 14, I was down in London recording demos and meeting people. And by the time I was 19, I moved to London when I was 19 after I went to college, and which is a bit of a waste of time because I didn't do any classes. I just learned how to play pool really well.
Yeah.
And then I moved to London. By the time I was 19, I'd already sort of spent about 5 or 6 years in London on and off. So I picked up a recording contract with Walter Yetnikoff and his little label that he started when he sold Columbia, I think it was, that he used to own. I'm not too sure.
Yeah.
So we started a label called Velvel, and I got picked up with Velvel, and then a producer called Chris Neal, who very middle of the road producer, did a lot of Michael Mechanics and Celine Dion, and sure, he did Walking in Memphis with Cher and a few people. So there were sort of heavyweights in the industry, you know, and I was like 19. So we did an album over there, and I hadn't really found my sound that I was happy with. It was a very produced sort of sound. They were kind of sort of lining me up for a bit of a pop career, really, which is not really where I come from as an artist, you know.
Right.
I'm not a strutter, I'm more of a strummer.
Fine.
Does that work?
That works, yeah. So Ben, what got you into the music in the first place? What were you, is it something you took to straight off? You know, I pick up a guitar, I want to play it forever, and or was it something that grew on you?
I don't know. It just happened, I think. I was good at running and stuff when I was a kid, but that was just too much hard work.
Yeah.
And then music just seemed to fall into place for me.
Right. Yeah. Now, you're well known as a songwriter and write some great material, as we're hearing on hear throughout the interview. Songwriting, and I think you won the Maton, was it the Maton Young Songwriters Award or Australian Songwriters Award in 2004?
Yeah, there was a few competitions on the same night, actually. There was a few prizes, and I got a few of them. I got the best acoustic act, the best song, the best overall song. I think it was about three awards, I can't remember. I won a guitar and won an EP and won some money and stuff like that. So, yeah, no, it was a good little prize for me.
Yeah, it sort of got your name around the place. Yeah. And but your songwriting, I guess, is something that's a unique talent. And is it something that came easy to you?
Yeah, I think it did, really, because my dad was always a big fan of Bob Dylan and words and lyrics and stuff. And so my dad writes a lot of poetry, or did do anyway,
right,
when I was a kid. So I started singing a lot of my dad's poems when I was really young.
Okay.
It sort of took me a little while to be able to kind of match it myself lyrically, you know, but I've been doing it for quite a while now, and it does come easy, but I think it's all about finding the right moment to do it. And if you try and force it when it's not the right moment, you'll write something, but it won't come across the same way as it will if you've written it in the right headspace, you know, in the right moment. And if you can find that right moment and you've got your guitar at that time, then you'll come up with a good song.
Sure.
And once you're in that moment, it's relatively sort of easy, really. You know, you just got to say what you want to say and make it rhyme and then put it to music.
So what sort of stimulates you to write songs?
Girls? I'm really trying to write songs that aren't about ex-girlfriends and girlfriends, but it's really hard.
You don't sort of read a newspaper and write a song about a topical event. They're usually about personal things, is that right?
Yeah, about personal things. I mean, you know, people should stop cutting down trees and all that, but I find it very hard to write about, you know, the environment. Or I'm trying to write a song about, you know, what's going on in the Middle East and everything, you know, and on both sides of it. I've seen a few documentaries, and there was this one that I saw, and it was when the troops were going into Fallujah, and there were snipers everywhere, and the only way they could find the snipers is by sending American troops running down the street to draw fire at them, you know. And I was just thinking, you know, these young kids in America that have joined the army because they have got nothing else to do, and they've offered them $3,000 to join, and they go to Iraq and they say, right, I want you to run down the street and then run back if you can, and we want the snipers to shoot at you so we can bomb them with rockets, you know. And I just think that's a really incredible, you know, not incredible, but terrible moment for someone to be in, you know,
that's right,
for all parties. And, you know, I'd like to write a song about that, but I haven't quite found the words for it yet.
Right.
I think I'll call it Run For Your Life.
Run For Your Life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's just terrible.
Yeah, so it sounds like a good... there's some things that stimulate you at sort of the personal relationship thing. But yeah, I guess it's harder to get those things so that they sound right.
Yeah.
Now, Ben, you started off in England. Were you recording on your own as a singer-songwriter or with a band?
On my own initially, but it was with session players. And the guy that owned the publishing studio had a bit of a setup, you know, he could put sequence drums and stuff to it. But when we went into the studio to do the album, it was all session musicians.
Right.
That came and worked on it.
And what happened to that material from that period?
Well, from what I can remember, Walter Getnikoff got sick and he gave his company up. So a lot of the acts that were on that label just sort of didn't do anything. And I found it very hard to get information from people, and I sat around for about a year and a half, which in the terms of things wasn't really a long time, but and in the moment it felt like a long time because I was just treading water for a year and a half, you know, and my advance ran out because they gave me a big advance when I signed, and then that ran out, and then I had no money and they didn't pick up the next period. So I had to start working, and my first job was demolition, and it was pretty much my first ever job, really. I was like 22.
Yeah.
Because I signed a publishing deal when I was 17.
Right.
So I was getting money from that, and then the recording contract when I was 19. So I had I had money coming in. I never really joined the workforce until, you know, that sort of stopped happening. And then, yeah, I was pouring down asbestos sheets out of Spitalfields markets in London.
That's great. Well, have you had the tests?
Yeah, I'm scared to get the tests, really. But hey, nothing is for always.
That's right. Was that song, new song you've written?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's hear a track Ben did in the studio. New track, Nothing Is For Always.
When my father said this life would come in waves, it's not about possessions, it's your soul you've got to save. People that you love won't change, places they will never stay the same. Love is very strange and you will learn that from the start. But always with your life, protect the one that holds your heart. They'll show you things you never seen, dream a dream you never dream. Nothing is for always, it's all about now. Soldiers do things your way, you'll figure it. Nothing is for always, it's all about now. Trust should be something that is so very hard to gain. It's a crazy world and sometimes it's okay to feel insane. When the good times they come and go, let things die and watch them grow. Bottom feeders of this world that live upon your soul, be wary of their gifts and of the spanners they will throw. The ones you need will come to you, that is why we're here for you. Nothing is for always, it's all about now. Soldiers do things your way, you'll figure it out. Nothing is for always, it's all about now. Soldiers do things your way,
So when did you move back to Australia? What prompted that?
4 years in London. I was living out in East London, and it was a very industrial part of town, and very expensive town to live in. And I've been there for a long time, and I hadn't been to Australia since I was 13. My parents had already moved back. They moved back about 4 years before that. When I moved to London, they moved back, and I was just getting photographs of the Sunshine Coast, and it just seemed very appealing. So.
Yeah,
I came back for a holiday initially. It was going to be a 10-week holiday.
Yeah,
that I came back for, which I've never actually gone back to Britain since. You know, I came back and then I spent all my money and then I started playing. And Australia's got a bit of a different vibe than London when I was there. You know, there was a lot of DJs that were getting a lot of the market. You know, and everyone was going out clubbing and there were places you could go and play, and I played a few gigs, but nothing like Australia, you know. Even up in Queensland, you pull out the guitar at barbecue, and all of a sudden you've got people going, wow, that's really, really good. And I think you have to have that sort of reaction from people to be able to get better, to be able to play. And when I moved to Melbourne, you know, I've been here for nearly 4 years now, and I think if it wasn't for the people that come to the gigs and the performances that I've done where the crowd's given that 100% energy back, you know, and in attention, that I don't think you can get better without that sort of scenario happening, you know what I mean?
Like,
you can't just sit in your room and play. So for me, it's been a really big development coming to Australia, and I just think, well, I'm enjoying myself more here. I'm getting more feedback from people here. I'm writing more stuff here. I'm living off my music here. And it just didn't really seem like I wanted to go back to London. I've already been there.
Sure. Do you have any plans? We're probably jumping ahead on the interview, but any plans to release your material overseas or go overseas from Australia?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I want to make it as big as possible, really. I'll do Australia first, you know, but we'll see what happens, you know, if we get a bit of a budget and it comes back and we can line it all up, you know, and absolutely, you know, and I wouldn't mind going. I've been over to States before, and I wouldn't mind going again and doing a bit of a tour, you know, but for the minute, you know, Australia, even Victoria, is keeping me alive, you know, with music and gigs and money and stuff. So until it's drawn me elsewhere, I don't think I'll go just yet.
You know, you're playing a lot around Melbourne, and a lot of gigs in a lot of places, and getting good crowds.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're trying to play a lot of venues where they haven't got door charges, you know.
Yeah.
Ever since we sort of started, we released the EP about a month ago, and we've been sort of
working. Which EP is that? The
Whiskey Sunset.
Whiskey Sunset. That's on Dust Devil Music.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, we met Dust Devil about May this year, and ever since then we've been pre-prodding and doing gigs, and we got the EP together and recording the album right now. So, excuse me, we've been just trying to do as many gigs as possible and then just sort of put ourselves out there as much as possible. So we've done a lot of gigs since May, and we've just done a big string of gigs which finished on Sunday last week, and we've got a bit of a break now. We're just finishing off the album, and December's looking pretty chockers stage. And,
now you originally came to notice as a singer songwriter with a guitar, and I noticed you've moved to a band, and you're now called the Ben Smith Band at the moment on this off the Whiskey Sunset CD. What prompted the shift from being a troubadour to a band member?
I suppose being able to play different venues and different crowds, you know, and we're a lot more adaptable now. I mean, I still do the acoustic set, you know. I still do a few acoustic songs when we play with the band, but I find that the doors open to a lot more venues, a lot more places to play with the band. And I ideally would have liked to have called it something else, but it just the way it happened, because I was playing as Ben Smith a lot, and then when we started working with the band, I was still under the Ben Smith, and then it just got a band put on the end of it, and Ben Smith Band, and it's just sort of stuck, you know. Don't particularly like it very much.
Ben Smith Band.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Smith's your real name.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is a lot in the phone book.
Yeah.
Smith and Jones, I think, the main ones.
Ben Smith's a great one to have because, I mean, I haven't got any middle names either.
Right.
So parking tickets never find me.
Yeah. That's
right. Neither does tax.
So, Ben, who's playing with you in the band at the moment?
Guy on drums is called Tim O'Connor, who I met about probably 3 years ago now, and we've been playing ever since. And
right.
Pat Carney plays bass, and he's originally a guitar player. He was in a band with Tim, and then our other bass player joined another band and left a few years ago, and we had a few gigs coming up, and Patty goes, well, I'll just learn bass. So he picked the bass up about a year and a half ago, and he's just been playing bass ever since for us, and it's great.
Well, I saw you guys at the Vineyard in St Kilda, and it was a great gig, and I think right at the end there where you were doing a lot of was it ad-libbing, and it was a really crooked thing, and the everybody in the place just stopped and came to the stage, which was a great sign itself, and the members of the band were really good that night.
They're awesome musicians. It makes life very easy when you've got good quality musicians.
Thank you. Yeah, here's a cut from the new CD, Whiskey Sunset, My Biggest Mistake.
Once again, the sun is rising. Out of nowhere it arrives. Once again, the birds are singing. Lets you know you're still alive. I wonder if I should call you, wake you from your sleep. Cause everything's much easier whenever we speak. It's time for me to blame myself. Cause for far too long, well, I've been blaming someone else. Now I'm lying back upon this bed I've made. But only for a while, but only for a while. Cause it's easier to run. Is a blessing only for a few. You crown me like no other does. I hope I do the same for you. Well, I think it's time for me to blame myself. Cause for what? Too long, well, I've been blaming someone else. Now I'm lying back upon this bed I've made. But only for a while, but only for a while. Cause it's easier to run away and hide behind the secrets I'm not yet prepared to give away. This could be one of the biggest mistakes I've ever made. Yeah.
Tell us about your recording. I know you've got two albums out in the Australian area anyway. One was called Acoustic, which came out, what, 2 years ago?
Yeah, about that.
Which
yeah.
was a set of acoustic numbers. Great great singing and songwriting on that, which is just you and a guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll try and play one or two of those tracks throughout the interview. But and then the new one is Whiskey Sunset, which is a five-track CD. But you're working on something new. What's happening there for the new year?
Well, the EP basically wasn't initially going to happen. It was just going to be the album, but we left it a little bit late because it would have come out, you know, the album would have come out about Christmas time, and we thought, the distribution company thought it would be best to leave it, wait till Christmas buzzes sort of you know, died down, and we'll start the release at the start of winter. So we started recording the album, and then when we decided we were going to do an EP, we went back in the studio, recorded a couple of songs, and we got some songs from another studio that we've been working at for the last few years, a place called Kick Studios, with a guy called Phil Trofel.
Right.
And we basically, because we had about 15, 16 songs there that we'd sort of done up in the last couple of years, and we grabbed about four of those and three of those and recorded a couple of new ones, and did the artwork, put it on a CD, booked launch, and just ran with it, yeah, and put it out there.
So how did the launch for this CD go?
It was really good. Yeah, it was really good. It was on a Wednesday night at Northcote Social Club. But right. it was good. It was a full house, and we got T-shirts made, and we sold some T-shirts, and we sold a heap of CDs, and a lot of people came. We got about 5 or 6 pages of email lists, you know, so it was a really productive night. And about time we actually put something out there. It's been a while.
That's great. And how would you describe the music on Whiskey Sunset, this latest? If you had to describe it, what would you call it?
I don't know. It's one of the hardest questions you could possibly ask me. It's like saying, what sort of music do you play? You know, kind of like this acoustic-y sort of stuff with a band. I'd say that there's a few songs on the Whiskey Sunset EP which are still acoustic based songs.
Right.
There's a couple of songs, actually quite a few of the songs on there really come from the heart, you know. I lost it. Actually, it's really funny that when we did that interview up in Port Douglas.
Yeah, a couple of years ago.
There was that coincidence with my cousin and stuff.
Yes.
Well, there's a song on there. Which one is it? Let me look at the CD. Bring On Whatever.
Right.
That's a song for Ruben.
Okay.
I don't know how to explain what the music's like.
Yeah, well, people always look for genres, genres, I don't know what we're going to call it this time, but, you know, blues, roots, alternate country, urban folk, pop. I don't even know where to put your stuff. I can't really find a title for it other than it's Ben Smith.
Urban blues pop.
That'll do. Urban blues pop. Because when you hear a Ben Smith song, you know it's you.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a particular style and phrasing and the way you do those lyrics and the guitar work. So it's unique to that extent. So, I mean, I was interested to ask you where you'd put it, but it's Ben Smith music, I guess.
Yeah, well, the album's even more confusing too, you know. We've been listening to a lot of Fat Freddy's Drop recently and we, you know, we've sort of... Not stolen, but you know, listen to a few of the beats and adapt it to an acoustic sort of song, and I wouldn't have a clue what to call it. I wouldn't have a clue.
You know, I guess it's not that important. No. Not that important. And well, tell me, Ben, you're making a living from your music, which is better than most can hope for.
Yeah.
And what do you find is the main source of that? Is it the touring and playing that keeps you alive, or?
At this stage, I'd say it was more the corporate gigs that keep me alive.
Okay.
The original side of things does take quite a while to build up and get momentum and stuff.
Right.
But I suppose I'm quite lucky, really, because I can just grab my guitar and go and play anywhere. So I've been playing at the Crown Casino a little bit and doing a few functions and weddings and stuff like that, which are very big payers, you know.
Right.
So I've sort of been living off that, and then mixing in the, you know, doing like 2 or 3 original shows a week with a, you know, a couple of corporate shows, and at the original shows, I usually, if I can make enough to pay everyone that turns up, then I've had a good night, you know.
Right.
So a lot of the time I'll do an original show and I walk away with nothing because I've paid, you know, the sound guy and the band members and stuff like that. So, but to me, that's what it takes to get somewhere, really.
And with corporate gigs, can you give us some examples of the sort of corporate gigs you get requested to do?
Well, we're playing a function at the Red Scooter with the band in December.
Right.
And then the second week in December, I'm flying up to Sydney to do a corporate show on a yacht in Sydney Harbour.
Right. That'd be nice.
Yeah, and then playing at the casino a little bit.
Yeah.
Which is, it's all right, I suppose. it's a very strange place, the Crown Casino. And I've got a couple of residencies that I do. I play the Beau Morris every Sunday, which is like a restaurant gig. I play originals and stuff.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. Do they prescribe your set list, or you can do what you like?
I do whatever I want.
Right.
You know, they're just happy to have someone playing, you know. So
yeah.
I play originals. I play a few. I mean, I do play cover gigs, but I don't play the cliched sort of covers. I play songs that I like, you know. And if no one knows them, then that's, if I can still get paid for playing a song that no one knows, then... Don't hang, you know.
Yeah, sure. You know. That's the hardest thing, I guess, especially as they get a few more beers, they want to sing along and lift the cigarette lighter in the air. Although they're not allowed to do that anymore. But
yeah. Well, I try my best to try and get quiet little, you know, restaurant gigs. You know, I don't like stick myself in front of, you know, 200 real drunk people that want to hear K-San.
Yeah.
I try and avoid those gigs like the plague because they're really hard.
Yeah.
So I'm sort of living off the little, you know, little backwater. Sort of restaurant-y sort of gigs. sure. sort of helped finance the project. You know?
Sure. And so what are some of your most memorable gigs that you've done?
Well, the launch, the EP launch, Grover definitely one of them.
Yes.
You know, it's probably the most hype we've had for a gig for a while.
Right.
When I won the guitar award, I played at the Melbourne Blues and Roots Festival. And I was the first on the stage, and it was like it's in the showgrounds at Melbourne. I can't remember what it's called, the big buildings and stuff there. And it was like a big warehouse site sized building. It was empty when I started. And then I sort of went up stage to start churning up, and about 400 or 500 people just walked in and sat down. So all of a sudden there was a massive crowd there. And so that was a really good gig too, you know. I've not played many sort of really big stages.
And who, you won that Maton award, was that sponsored by Maton Guitars?
Yeah, sponsored by Maton Guitars and ABC.
And the ABC.
Yeah.
So what did that do for your career in Australia?
It introduced me to a lot of people in the industry, which is really sometimes hard to sort of cut through, because there's so many amazing artists in Melbourne. So many people do what I do as well, and, you know, and so, I think better, you know, because it's my own music, you know. I tend to like other people's stuff more than my own, because I've written it and I've played it 1,000 times, and I hear something new and I'm like, wow, I wish I'd thought to write something like that, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a melting pot of talent, really, Melbourne, and I think it's to be able to cut through and, you know, be noticed, it's really quite an achievement, you know.
Sure. And where are some of your favourite venues around Melbourne? Where do you like to play?
Well, there was a venue called the Soak Bar, which was one of those venues that I played at, you know, once a fortnight, and had a room full of people, and it was a real, like, lounge room, my second home to me sort of thing.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's closed down now. Well, it's not closed down, it's changed hands, and it's called something else, but it's just not the same. The new owners don't give me free drinks anymore, and so I tend to go other places now.
Yeah.
We've been playing a bit at a venue on Sydney Road called the Brunswick Hotel.
Yeah,
that's a really cool venue. You know, they don't do any door charges. Good stage and nice room and bars just there. Lots of locals, lots of people that walk through.
Yeah,
I'm really, really dig playing there. We're playing there on the 14th of December and the 3rd. We just did a gig at the Transport Bar in Federation Square.
Yep,
I really like that place because there's got big bay windows and a lot of people walking past. And, you know, when the band sort of fires up, we get a lot of people walking in.
Sure,
you know, coming hanging out. I used to play the Espy quite a lot, but that's sort of changed a bit these days, and I haven't played there for a while.
Yeah. I think I saw you at the Espy a few years back.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, and I mean, you know, you have to say nice things now, but what are your fan base? Who is it? Is it young people? Is it old people? Is it all sorts of people? How would you describe the people who like Ben Smith?
Oh, it's definitely across the board. I went on 774 a few years ago, and all my friends' parents now are, you know, big fans as well.
Right.
Definitely across the board. There's a handful of people, quite a few people that have been following it since the acoustic album.
Right.
And we've also broke through a few more people in the last 6 months with all the gigs. You know, the fan base is sort of raised. But I find it actually changes with different parts of town,
right?
You know, because Melbourne's such a place, you know, there's so many bands. You go to a venue and they get a gig and they say, yeah, you can play, but you have to bring people.
Yeah.
It's hard to play a gig, say, at the Elwood Lounge and get your people from, you know, North Melbourne to come all the way down, drive, yeah, and drink and then drive home. So it's a very localized sort of scene, so it all depends on what part of town we're in. You know, we'll almost have different mailing lists for different areas,
sure,
you know, of people that live there. But I think until you sort of really get airplay and you get a lot of push on radio, your fan base will sort of still stays pretty local.
This track, also from Whiskey Sunset, called Bring On Whatever.
Sad about today. Been
try so hard to make things go my way. I can't believe, baby, I can see that maybe some things were never meant to be. There's nothing else that I can do, so I'll just keep on doing what I do. Nothing else that I can do, so I'll just keep on doing what I do. So bring on whatever comes my way. Well, bring on whatever is mine to take away. Well, bring on whatever. Shown, and I realize it's mine and mine alone. But please believe that this is not the end, 'cause I see you all again someday, my friends. There's nothing else that I can do, so I'll just keep on doing what I do. Nothing else that I can do, so I'll just keep on doing what I do. So bring on whatever comes my way. Bring on whatever is mine to take away. Bring on whatever.
So in terms of being like a musician, you have to market yourself. You know, you Dust Devil Music are now your label.
Yeah.
And they look after distribution and with Stomp.
Yeah.
I think. But in terms of keeping everything flowing for yourself, what do you have to do?
Well, they've got a market. They've got a promotions company now, Music Biz Australia,
right?
Who are pretty good at keeping up, you know, sending things to radio stations and putting articles in the Beat and in press and stuff. So that's sort of picking up again. a lot of the work, a lot of the gigs I booked myself and posters up myself, and you know, got my own little street team that helped me out.
Yeah.
So I think it's just staying on top of it and keep pushing it, even if you're doing a couple of gigs a month, just let people know about them and
And do you find you get fresh calls come from nowhere from the gigs you've done, or is it usually a network of people you've got?
What do you mean for gigs? Or?
Yeah, for gigs and or just people hear about Ben Smith. Are you getting like new gigs from people you hadn't heard before? Or
It sort of got to the stage now where when I first came here, you know, you go to a venue and you say I want a gig, they say, well, you know, give us a demo and da da da. Whereas now I can pretty much call up any places.
You don't have to come in with the CDs and
just like move to a gig, like,
beg on the floor. Yeah.
Yeah. So you know, I've played most of the venues in Melbourne and I've sort of found the ones that I like and I'm sort of sticking to them.
Yeah.
You know? But the whole festival scene's a whole other thing. You know?
Yeah. No, I was going to ask, do you do many festivals?
I haven't really done many festivals.
Because Australia's big on music festivals at the moment, isn't it? They seem to be everywhere.
I've got a couple of friends that are kicking goals right now, and they're doing really well. And it's a really good way to make money and to travel and to see the world, see Australia, I mean. But I keep missing out, really, because I never really get the applications in on time.
Right.
And then with Australia, too, it's a small scene, and it sometimes takes quite a while to get onto some of these festivals.
And there seem to be some bands or musicians who just mainly do festivals and travel to do that, and others sort of stick with their local area.
Yeah, well, a lot of the bands that do well have been doing it for 10 years, you know.
Yeah,
and they're out there sort of been doing it. They've made all the connections and
festival circuit.
Yeah.
Now, Ben, of the music, let's go back to the acoustic album. What are some of your favourites on that particular album?
Well, Bloodshot Eyes is still one of my favourites. We're actually redoing it for the album. We put the band to it and stuff.
Oh, that'd be good, yeah.
Bloodshot Eyes. I sort of like all of them equally. I mean, I've been playing this acoustic album for the last 3 years, you know, and these songs, so... a lot of the time, when I go and play a gig, I'm trying to play the new stuff as much as possible.
Yeah.
Because it's something that I like, you know, and get into. There's a lot of, like, this acoustic album's pretty much my life, you know, the best songs out of my whole life, really, up until, 2.5 years ago when we put it out.
Right.
Let Me Down Gradually is another one that we're doing on the other album with the band.
I always like that one, Pretend.
Pretend, we're doing Pretend as well.
Yeah, let's listen to something from Ben's earlier album, just called Acoustic, a whole bunch of acoustic numbers. This track called Pretend.
The sun is starting to rise, still I can't get to sleep. About too many promises to keep. So I look out my window, try and change my frame of mind. This town holds no more secrets, nothing left for me to find. Should I wait here indefinitely? I just want you to pretend you want me. Well, is there something to hold on just for me? I just want you to pretend. I just want you to pretend. If I was to set off walking down the streets that stretch for miles, if I was to see you along the way, all I could offer you is a smile. 'Cause the days are so much longer now that the summer is at the door, and I can't walk much further now that the rain hinders me no more. should I wait here indefinitely? I just want you to pretend, pretend you won't be. Well, is there something to hold on just for me? I just want you to pretend, I just want you to pretend, I just want you to pretend, I just want you to pretend.
The big question is, where do you see the future heading for Ben Smith, both Ben Smith Band and Ben Smith as a singer-songwriter? Are you going to, where do you think you'll be in 10 years' time?
Oh, man, I have no idea. You know, if you asked me this 5 years ago, I would not be able to tell you where I am now. You know?
Yeah.
I hope to keep doing what I'm doing and keep playing and, you know, maybe land a couple of songs and a couple of movies and,
yeah,
you know, get myself a... get rid of the Camry and get myself a nice car and, you know, you know, get my mate and fixed and stuff like that. But I don't really know. Just as long as I can keep doing what I'm doing and make a living from it, I'll be happy.
Yeah. Have you done any work with film or TV yet?
Yeah, I've done a bit of work with, I've been on TV a couple of times and I've been on a couple of independent movies, you know.
Okay.
So, a couple of movies that, mate of mine, Marty Copping, produced and filmed.
Yeah.
So I've sort of done the soundtrack for his last two movies, and he's doing a new movie at the minute about vampires, I believe. So,
right.
Yeah, based in Melbourne, so I'm going to be doing all the music for that as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they've got into Chokefest and stuff like that, but nothing really, really big. I've had one of my songs covered by someone from Coronation Street.
Coronation Street,
yeah,
in the UK.
Yeah, the soap opera in the UK. Yeah. The shopkeeper Curly Watts covered one of my songs and did well in New Zealand apparently because they still show Coronation Street over there.
Is that right?
Yeah,
it's not in Australia anymore. I'm pretty sure.
No, I've not seen it for years.
Yeah, I did think, but I guess we now export Neighbours.
Yeah, it's a big export Neighbours.
That's right.
Yeah.
I see down in St Kilda, they have bus tours from St Kilda out to Vermont to see Ramsey Street.
Is that where Ramsey Street is?
Yeah.
Vermont?
It's in Vermont.
Wow.
So we won't tell anybody what the reality is. Let the illusions keep going. It's miles from the beach. That's for sure. Now, obviously, you started off with acoustic guitar, you had a nylon string, and then you still work at that with the band. You have a... electrified acoustic.
Yeah.
First question is, do you play electric?
I do play electric, but I don't play electric much when
right.
I play gigs. I mean, I should do, really. It's just something that I've never really... Well, I used to play a lot more when I was a kid, but it's almost like the musicians that I have around me are much better than me at electric, so it's almost easier to get someone to play electric and
right.
me to keep playing
so
acoustic.
So you keep it in the case.
Yeah, yeah. I've got a couple of really nice electrics too.
Right.
But it's something that I'm, you know, trying to work in when I get the time to, you know, relearn. Because it's a totally different instrument, really.
Yeah.
The acoustic's very rhythmical. You know, I find myself bashing out the rhythm quite a bit with the drummer, and me and the drummer hook up really well and
right.
play. But with the electric, it's not as much of a percussive instrument, you know. If you try and play electric like you do acoustic, it doesn't sound very good.
No, it doesn't work. It's almost like two different things, aren't they?
They are two different instruments, totally.
Yeah. So know. Interesting to hear you do some electric stuff one day and just to see what you do with it.
Yeah, yeah.
I think your style is quite Ben Smith style. When you hear you playing guitar, it's almost percussive, isn't it?
Yeah.
With chord structure.
Yeah.
Where did you develop that technique? Is it something that came out and you sat in the bedroom, or did your original guitar teachers point you in that direction? Or?
No, well, when I came back from London, I didn't, you know, I played guitar a lot when I was a kid, but from the ages of about, I don't know, 14 to 22, I didn't really play that much, you know. I played in the studio a lot. I never played much with bands. It wasn't until I came to Australia. And when I came to Australia, I started doing a duo with a guy called Ewan Clunan, and he's a great guitar player and singer, so I went and bought a djembe, and I just played percussion, and I think that's helped me an awful lot with rhythm. And I think whenever I sort of, when people ask me, you know, what's the most important thing about playing guitar, I'd say it's your strumming hand, you
mm-hmm.
know, it's your rhythm. You know, you hear some great guitar players, you know, finger picking is also, you know, a really, really rhythmical way of playing, and I think playing the drums and playing percussion to other artists has helped me a lot with beats and times and where things land and stuff like that. So I think that's helped me a lot.
Right.
With percussion.
And has your technique changed over the years?
Oh, yeah. I think so. I mean, I think it's just got better, really. So it sort of changes every time I sort of learn something new. Or it's changed a lot since I've been with the band, too. You know, a lot of the songs now, I think, are a lot bit more simple.
Right.
Simpler musically,
yep.
But can be made, which I think is really good when it comes to a band. You know, you don't want to do too many things too complicated, too many weird chord changes and stuff. I mean, you can do them, and
yeah.
Everyone does them. And I think it's a process that everyone goes through when you're a songwriter and you've been songwriting for a long time. You have to try and, you feel like you have to try and reinvent your style, because you've already written songs with these chords in them, and then you've already written songs with these sort of chord structures, and you go, where do you go from now?
Yeah.
And it's usually always more complicated. And I went down that path for a while and wrote some really complex songs, and then I sort of pulled it back again and made everything a lot more simple and just worked on sounds and tones and stuff like that. So and then the melody is obviously the most important thing, I think, to a song. You know, it's what
yeah.
people remember. And so I think that as long as you've got a good bed for your melody, and then everything should be all right.
So what's your favourite guitar?
Well, I got to say the Maton at the minute, because it was free, and and it's an absolute workhorse. And the back of it's, the drummer took a drum solo one night because we did a gig and he didn't have any toms, so we were very drunk.
Yes.
So the back of it's all the struts have fallen off, and
right.
acoustically it's actually pretty dead, but it's a really good workhorse. Stays in tune.
Yes.
I can bash it, you know, I can throw it around and I can get real stuck into it when I'm playing. The Maton's a machine, and it's only the bottom end of the market, but it's a really good guitar.
You know? An Australian guitar too, we'll have to plug in there for the listeners.
Yeah.
When you won that award, that guitar was a part of the prize, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
And any other guitars that you liked, got your eye on?
I write with this guy called Craig Sayer.
Yeah.
And he's just bought himself a brand new Martin.
Right.
That's a beautiful guitar. It really is. Really is a really nice guitar. My second guitar that I ever got, my first steel string, was a Martin copy called a Sigma.
Right.
And I bought it for $200 from Gympie when
yeah.
I was about 10.
Right.
And
Gympie in Queensland.
Yeah, Gympie in Queensland. And it's still to this day the best sounding guitar in the studio.
Is that right?
Yeah. It's a cheap, but it was like made in the 80s sometime, but I've just been playing it since I was 10, so
yeah.
You know, what's that, 3 years?
The instruments tend to grow with you when you play them, a strange thing, isn't it?
I think acoustic guitars, like, because that's got a solid body and solid top. Oh, I'm not too sure about the back. I don't know what it is, but it's nice anyway. But I think the more you play, especially Martins and stuff like that, they get better with age.
Yeah.
He's got a brand new Martin that's worth about $5,000. And yeah, in 10 years, it might sound like my Sigma.
Yeah.
But at the minute, it sounds beautiful, but it just hasn't got the warmth and the bottom end as the Sigma has. But the Sigma's like, there's no pickup in it, so I can't really play it live. And I've tried to get a few pickups in it, but they've all kind of not worked very well. And I had a bit of a nightmare trying to make it a gig guitar. So I'm just keeping the Sigma as a studio guitar.
Yes.
And use the Maton as a workhorse. You know?
I remember Rai Kuda saying his favourite guitar was a $50 thing from a second-hand shop.
Yeah.
And even though he can have any guitar he likes, but he plays and records with that thing because it's got the right sound.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Bob Dylan earlier in the interview. What are your influences, Ben? Who would you say has sort of influenced you?
Oh, I think my influence is Bob Marley. He's one of my favourite artists.
Yeah. You do hear some of his songs?
Yeah, I do a few of his songs. I mean, I did my own versions of them, you know.
Yeah.
It's very hard to do them like Bob does them, you know. But I sort of do it my way.
Yeah.
Bob Dylan's a few Bob Dylan tunes that I like. There's a few Dire Straits songs that I like. I'm actually putting Romeo and Juliet on the new album.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're doing a token cover on the album. Let me think. Erykah Badu, her live stuff. I've really got into. My music collection is really poor, actually. I think I don't know many songwriters that are total song lovers.
You know? Right.
I think it's almost one or the other.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's hard to sort of.
So just listening to other people sort of block you creating new stuff? Do you tend to sort of like block it out and just rather have not influences?
Well, I wouldn't say I have many influences that are anything like what I do.
Right.
A lot of music I like, nothing really where I'm at musically.
Right.
I think because it might be too similar. You know, I don't really listen to that many sort of singer-songwriters all the time. You know,
right.
I'll go home, I'll put on Rage Against the Machine or, you know, Fatboy Slim or, you know, Fat Freddy's Drop. So, you know. It's
totally different to what you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it's and when you do your own stuff, it's what you're creating.
Yeah.
At the time, not copying.
I don't want to say it's a conscious thing. It's just something that happens, you know.
Yeah. I think. Yeah. No, well, that's interesting. I mean, some songwriters say they write because no one else writes what they want to hear.
Yeah, I probably would have said that if I thought about it.
you know, I want to hear a song that goes like this. Can't I find one? No, I have to do that myself.
Yeah.
So it's a creative thing, and I guess if you're listening to too much of the same, it blocks you out. I mean, maybe that's. I mean, I guess it has to be like that, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think my biggest goal too is to create a sound that. It's not, you can't put a name to, you know, it sounds like this. I mean, I know people sort of try and compare me to John Mayer and Jack Johnson and stuff, but that's only because I play an acoustic guitar and I'm about the same age, you know.
Sure.
Like, that's really, personally, that's the only similarity, you know. I mean, don't get me wrong, I really like what John Mayer does, but I don't think I'm anything like it, you know. He's a real major key sort of singer-songwriter, where I'm a lot more minor key and a lot of my changes are different and my melodies are totally different, you know.
Yes.
And the same as Jack Johnson, but they just sort of put you in that basket straight away because you look the same and you sort of, you know, might initially sort of sound the same because you've got the same sounds and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's you get pigeonholed.
Yeah, great track here from Ben Smith. This one, Sooner or Later, from the album Acoustic.
Listen closely now. I've been losing my mind. Shut the door, sat down, got a drink. Hope you don't mind that I've been sitting here, hiding under my hat, and I filled up an ashtray. About 10 minutes flat. When will I see you again? I've been holding on. I'm still holding on. Sooner or later she'll come to me. I'm sitting right here 'cause I know she'll be finding her way home. Sooner or later she'll come to me. I'm sitting right here 'cause I know she'll to what you say, but never plan my reply, and I'm still waiting here. Is that any surprise? And it's not hard to see how far we have come, and when she comes back to me, we'll keep chasing the sun. But when will I see you again? I've been holding on. I'm still holding on. Sooner or later she'll come to me. I'm sitting right here 'cause I know
But tell me, man, what are some of the hard things about being an independent artist? Well, not independent. You've got a label. Like some of our people we interview are totally independent. I've been doing it for 20 years. What are some of the hard things?
Being broke all the time.
Being broke all the time. Yeah. That's a musician's lot, isn't it?
Yeah. Hard things. Oh, I don't know. It's hard to sustain a relationship.
Because you're on the move all the time.
Oh, you're on the move all the time, but you sort of, I don't know. It is hard. You know, I mean, my ex-girlfriend was a singer-songwriter as well, and I sort of saw it from the other side, and it is hard, you know, because she'll be going playing gigs, and there'll be, you know, 10 blokes in the audience going, whoa, you know, and I'd be going there, and I'd be going, I want to bash them all. You know?
Yeah.
So I'm sort of a bit more advanced from that now. Sort of dealt with a few things, but I can understand, and my present girlfriend, Sarah, I can understand how, you know, she's really good with it, you know, but I can understand how it must be hard to have a musician as a partner. What are the other hard things? I don't know, giving up smoking's hard.
Yeah.
And stopping drinking, you know, especially when you're playing so many gigs, because you get a rider and, you know, you can smoke and drink at work. So
yes,
it's very easy to become an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Playing music all the time.
Yeah.
So you
get paid across the bar.
Yeah, paid across the bar and then paid in cash, and you go, well, we might as well have a tequila now and got some money, you know. And
yeah.
So that's also very hard, and, you know, it's not a very stable sort of lifestyle as such. You know, it's, you don't really know where your cash is coming from, and so that's a bit hard. It's, you sort of are living day to day, but that's a sacrifice for the lifestyle that you're living, you know.
Sure.
It's, I mean, a lot of people that work since they were 19 and got a car and a house would give it all away to be a musician and to sort of live that sort of lifestyle, you know.
Yeah. So what keeps you going?
Well, I don't know what else to do.
Oh, it's got to be more than that.
Yeah. Oh no, it's not. It is more than that. I mean, I love doing what I'm doing. I don't really know what else to do, really, because I've spent my whole life doing it, and I'm finding a way to do it all the time, which is great, you know. And it's just a bit of a snowball effect, you know. You got to start it up and then keep the ball rolling and see where you end up, you know. And if your ball gets, the snowball gets big enough, you'll, you know, end up at the ocean.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Does that work? It's another analogy that I made up on the spot. But yeah, I think it is hard to know, you know. And I know a lot of musicians that are amazing legend musicians, you know, that have got a big name and they've done really well, and they've got absolutely nothing to show for it, you know, in terms of possessions and,
yes,
you know, houses and stuff like that.
Well, I think it's the same all over the world. I mean, there's a foundation in America for the old blues singers, because they get to 60 and they've got not very little, and so they now run benefit gigs. They've got a foundation, the Blues Foundation, which is helps these guys get on.
Yeah, so foundation for Melbourne singer-songwriters.
Yeah, we'll have to start one.
Yeah, well, I reckon you should have a foundation for the aging rockers from the 70s and 80s around Australia, because, you know, you've got a wealth of them.
Well, they just did a countdown tour. We better edit that out.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So it is a lifestyle choice. It's a life choice, you know, to keep doing it and pursuing it, you know, because you sort of get to around about late 20s and you go, well, what am I going to do, you know, with, you know, with my life? Where do I want to be in 10 years' time, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a big sort of question, really, you know. And that's what a lot of people sort of go career on it. I know musicians that don't play in bands anymore because they've, you know, joined the fire service and, you know, or become a cop or something.
Yeah.
You know, so it is a hard one.
If people want to get hold of your material to help fund the Ben Smith Foundation, what do they do? They come to a gig?
Come to gigs, internet as well.
An internet,
Stomp, the distribution company.
Yeah, so tell us where, if people want to buy your material or CDs, where do they get hold of them?
Well, they can get hold of them from the website, my website, which is bensmith-music.com. www.
Yep.
What does W stand for?
World Wide Web.
Oh, okay. Now I know.
I hope.
Dust Devil, which is dustdevilmusic.com.
Yep.
They have it available as well, and then Stomp, the distribution company. Apparently, you can get it worldwide now. Stomp has just gone worldwide. So.
Great. So anybody listening around the globe can get hold of this material off those websites.
The EP Whiskey Sunset is available through Stomp, and the acoustic album which is available through me, through my website, bensmith-music.com. So if you want the EP, you can go through Stomp, but if you want the back catalogue, you have to
get onto Ben.
Yeah, just send us an email at bensmithmusic.
Right. We could even put it on iShop or Douglas, which is... we're friends with those people.
Cool.
Very friendly.
Yeah. It's the population of Port Douglas.
That's right. They can order it automatically online there, so we can look at that as well. So people can come to those websites and get hold of that music, or if they're in Melbourne, they'll be able to go to gigs, which have been quite regular, but you're now going to concentrate on the album.
Yeah. We've just done a big stream of gigs last sort of 3 or 4 months, actually. We've done a load of gigs.
Yeah.
I think it's important, especially a town like Melbourne, you don't do too many, because your fan base will be sort of, well, I went last week, I'm not going this week again.
Yeah.
You know, so we're going to have a bit of a break. We've got a couple in December. Got one confirmed for the 14th at the Brunswick Hotel, Thursday the 14th, and that's it for now. So we're just going to concentrate on getting this album finished. And getting all the artwork done and getting it ready for next year.
Great. Well, we look forward to listening for that, playing a few tracks on the show. So look, it's been great to talk with you, Ben, and hearing about where you've been and where you're going, and some of the ups and downs in the music industry.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly got a lot of talent there which people are recognising, and I think will continue to do so. And we appreciate you giving us some time to come in and talk to us.
Oh look, anytime, man. Thank you very much.
No one else could ever see the person that I choose to be. You're bringing closure to another beautiful day.